This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many Americans assume that all evangelical Christians identify with the religious right. Jim Wallace says that's a false assumption. He's an evangelical Christian whose priorities include fighting poverty, racism, and sexism. Although he shares many of the left's political views, he criticizes the left for failing to articulate or demonstrate the moral values that are the foundation of any strong social change movement. Wallace is a co-founder of Sojourners, a religious community that lives in the inner city of Washington, D.C., and publishes a magazine about faith, politics, and culture. I asked Wallace how his faith informs his politics and how he thinks that compares to the religious right.
The word evangelical is a wonderful word. It comes from the word evangel, which means good news. And Jesus, in his first sermon at Nazareth, which I like to call his Nazareth Manifesto, he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the evangel, good news to the poor." And he talks about liberating the captives and breaking, setting free those from oppression. That's the good news. That's the evangel. Now, the religious right today is not known for preaching a message of good news to poor people. And I think the word evangelical has been so co-opted and corrupted by the religious right that we've lost the richness of its meaning and power.
Are there things that you feel you agree on politically or spiritually with evangelical Christians who are a part of the organized right?
I think the religious right has tapped into a genuine public longing for a politics that's connected to values. I think the crisis we face in this country is really a crisis of spirit. It calls for more than politics as usual or even religion as usual, for that matter. And it calls for what the Bible, my tradition, calls the healing of the nation, I think. So a politics that combines a real concern for moral values and social justice is at the heart of my concern, and I identify very much with the people who raise me and evangelical folks out there who care about moral values and about the breakdown of the culture. For example, I think we are experiencing an unraveling of the culture. It's moral framework and structures. There's a kind of lack of respect on every level of this society. But we're also facing economic, political, social oppression. And the left and the right have become almost dysfunctional categories now, where the liberal left talks more about social oppression and the right talks about the breakdown of the culture. Well, I think they're both critical and they're deeply related. We have to understand how the breakdown of the culture and its sort of understandings of civility and basic respect and compassion are linked to the removal of 70,000 jobs from South Central Los Angeles, for example, before the Rodney King verdict.
I think a lot of people confuse evangelical with fundamentalist. What's the difference, and is fundamentalism a part of your faith?
Well, when I was growing up in an evangelical church, we thought of ourselves as evangelical, and we also talked about the fundamentalists who were on the right. I mean, I knew Jerry Falwell's name back in those days before he ever became a famous figure on the national level. And fundamentalism was, without going into all of his history, was a movement in reaction to liberal Protestantism in the beginning of the century. And they went back to the fundamentals of their faith. But I think it's been principally a reactive movement, a movement in reaction, whereas evangelical, in its best sense, as I said, is sort of it's a biblical faith, saying that the biblical vision is critical for us.
I think one of the reasons why a lot of Americans are skeptical of opening up the political debate to include more about religion is this. A lot of people are afraid that the more religion enters the political debate, the more it risks becoming about one particular religion, which might not be your religion. Or maybe you're not a person who is part of an organized religion and you want the freedom to remain so, and you fear that the laws of the country will begin to represent the laws of one faith.
Mm-hmm. Those are good questions, and a lot of people have those on their minds. I would just say this. The public square really is naked without spiritual values. And we have to find a way to bring spirituality into the public square in a pluralistic and democratic society that is tolerant, that is inclusive, that is respectful of differences in religion, and even where there's no religion at all, but people are hungry for this question of spiritual value. So we, because the religious right has created this notion that you can't do this without becoming bigots or becoming totalitarian or theocratic, imposing our views on somebody else, it's made people afraid. It's interesting, though. People, I think, are drawn to a more spiritual notion of politics while they're at the same time afraid of religious intolerance. Both of those things I find to be true. So how do we bring spirituality into the discussion, into the political debate, in a way that is very, very respectful of a pluralistic, democratic, inclusive society, because that's what we have now.
Let me give you an example of an issue that is very politically charged and also very controversial from a religious perspective. And I'm of course thinking of abortion. Mm-hmm. Abortion goes against the faith of many people in America. Many other people in America are of a faith that allows abortion or don't belong to an organized religion and therefore believe, therefore don't have anything that prevents them mm-hmm. from being comfortable with the idea of abortion when a woman feels it is necessary. Mm-hmm. Now, you, I know, are opposed to abortion. Your group Sojourners is opposed to abortion. How do you enter the public debate on that from a perspective that is both multicultural and respectful of the differences of other people's faiths on that issue, and yet that addresses your spiritual, moral concerns about abortion?
I think on an issue like abortion, for example, we really are desperately in need of finding some new middle ground. I think that people on both sides of this debate have legitimate concerns about the sacredness of human life and the vulnerability that women feel in a patriarchal society to make choices. How is gender justice going to be possible? See, Sojourners is committed both to the sacredness of human life, and we have a genuine feminist commitment. And I think we have to explore middle ground. Middle ground that doesn't criminalize desperate choices on the one hand. On the other hand, tries to create alternatives to abortion, tries to create, as I say, an agenda of justice for women, which makes abortion less and less necessary, that even discourages abortion, but offers other alternatives. So I'm not sure exactly what those formulations would be, but I'm encouraged how that there's even groups called Middle Ground forming around the country. And interestingly enough, they are women on both sides of the debate, who are talking about seeking together some common ground on these questions.
My guest is Jim Wallace, founding editor of Sojourners Magazine and author of the new book, The Soul of Politics. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jim Wallace, author of the new book, The Soul of Politics. I'm interested in how you got to the place where you are now in terms of faith and politics. Tell us something about the Christianity you grew up with.
Well, I grew up in Detroit, and the home of Motown. So I grew up, our high school dances had Diana Ross and Stevie Wonder, who we called Little Stevie Wonder back then, which created a problem for me because in my home and family, they didn't want you to dance, and I couldn't ever listen to Motown without wanting to dance. So that was a contradiction right away with the evangelical faith I was raised in.
So dancing was against the faith?
Well, yeah, it was frowned upon.
What else was against the faith that you wanted to do as a teenager?
It was like, dancing, drinking, smoking, those kinds of things. Those defined the, what people shouldn't do. What happened for me was I was reared in that very middle American, middle class, evangelical, white context. And when I got to be about 14 or 15, there were some questions that just came, that arose in my own heart that wouldn't go away, which was, why do we live the way we do in white Detroit when just a few blocks, a few miles away in black Detroit, People are living very different lives. I didn't know anybody who ever missed a meal. I didn't know any family who's at that point, their dad at least didn't have a job. I didn't know anybody who had any loved ones in jail, in prison. And yet I was reading in the newspapers and hearing on television that life was very different, not very far from where I live. There were people who were unemployed and hungry, and the jails were full. And I noticed how people changed, just their faces and body language, whenever the issue of the city or crime or race came up.
So were you asking yourself, why is it bad to dance, but no one's telling me that poverty is bad?
Well, those sort of the prohibitions about dancing and those things, they never fazed me much. I went out on Friday night to dance. Those things seemed like not the heart of faith to me. And when I raised these questions about things that felt more important to me than whether we danced or not, I got this kind of answer. They said, you're too young to ask these questions. When you get older, you'll understand. Or, we don't know why things are that way either, but it's always been that way. And the only honest answer I got to the question was, if you keep asking these kinds of questions, you're going to get into a lot of trouble. And that proved to be true.
You left your faith for a while. I guess that's when you became an activist in the civil rights and anti-war movements.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What brought you back?
Well, I was organizing for a lot of years, like a lot of the rest of us in those movements, and I think we came to a crisis, I know I did, of looking at, you know, what was the foundation for our commitment to social justice? What was the kind of vision that would change our own personal lives? I found the limitations, if you will, of the movement and the left and the student movement and all that. I didn't find enough of the answers there. After those years, I went back to the Bible and read it again with fresh eyes. And I found in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus talks about a whole new order of things that turns the world on its head, our traditional values, turns them upside down. Blessed are the poor. Blessed are those who hunger for justice. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who mourn, who have the capacity for grief, who have compassion. Those really were converting words to me. I'd never heard a sermon on the Sermon on the Mount in all my years growing up in the churches. Then I got to Matthew 25, which is my conversion passage, and Jesus says, I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was naked, I was a stranger, I was sick, I was in prison, and you didn't come to see me. You weren't there for me. And all the people said, Lord, when do we see you? Hungry and thirsty and naked and sick and in prison and not come to you. And he says, as you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. And that turned a light on in my head. I realized that everything I was learning in the inner city of Detroit and the jungles of Southeast Asia from people who were disenfranchised, on the bottom, who were the victims of our policies, domestic and foreign, that Jesus, in fact, had been with them, among them, and I was learning from them, as Dorothy Day, the Catholic worker, calls Jesus in the distressing disguise of the poor. And so I realized at that point that while I had left the faith and left the church, I really hadn't gotten rid of Jesus. He was there the whole time among the people that were teaching me the most and really opening my eyes and changing the way I looked at life.
You're one of the founders of Sojourners, which is a community of faith. Tell us a little bit about the principles that hold the group together.
Well, Sojourners is a Christian community, and we live in the inner city of Washington, D.C. We are committed to that simple gospel message, that evangel, that good news that Jesus talked about. Good news to the poor and good news for all of us. We're committed to a biblical faith. We're committed to peacemaking. We're committed to living with, working with, standing alongside those who are always on the bottom of everybody else's priority list. We deeply believe in community, which means we try and share our lives together. We're committed to each other. We try to make that commitment real. We live very close together in a particular part of the city. We share our resources together. And we believe that we've been called to this. You know, it's not just a job or a sense of career and vocation, but there's a sense of calling. So I think faith is at the heart of it for us.
Jim Wallace is a member of the Sojourners community in Washington, D.C. He's founding editor of Sojourners Magazine and author of the new book, The Soul of Politics. This is Fresh Air.